Las Vegas. Here we go on the Sunday morning before Memorial Day. Just after 8, I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Citywide Home Mortgage Studio in Las Vegas, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station, Vegas Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The We today only includes longtime Lotus Broadcasting producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who besides producing this show, wears many hats here at Lotus Broadcasting, including serving as the post-game locker room and press conference reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. And Chris and I are alone today because The Wiz, which we don't even have his theme music, is in the middle of the ocean somewhere on his honeymoon cruise. I asked him where he was at. I haven't gotten a response yet. My guess is where he is at right now is sleeping. So, Wiz, enjoy your honeymoon. He will be back with us next week. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network. And again, you can normally watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. But this week, we are only on the radio. You can also follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Citywide Home Mortgage Studio Line, is 702-876-1340. And that brings us to What's on Tap, which is brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Citywide Home Mortgage. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans, powered by Citywide Home Mortgage, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. Call 702-964-5720 to get information on all of the home financing options currently available and up-to-the-minute interest rates on tap. The Vegas Golden Knights season is over, as we know. It ended a little over a week ago. But if you're wondering who will be part of the Vegas Golden Knights and what players might not be part of the team this coming fall, well, we're going to cover that on Nightcap in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking all about VGK free agency. Also, the NHL down to the Final Four, and real soon, matter of fact, as early as tomorrow night, they might be down to the Final Three. We'll discuss that. NBA playoffs, same thing. They are down to their Final Four, and just a surprise, man. One team just can't win at home, and yet nobody even thought that team would be in the conference final. I don't think either team, matter of fact, in the East was thought to be there. And I think if you look at the West, probably the same thing. It's a head-scratcher all the way around, which to me is making the NBA playoffs a lot of fun this year. During fact, this, we'll talk about that. We'll stick to basketball. The WNBA is rolling. The Las Vegas Aces, 2-1 after winning their last two games. Dramatic fashion. On Friday night, they went over the Washington Mystics, a team that everyone thought they were going to roll over, including the odds makers that had them at like plus 14 in that game, or I should say minus 14, and the Aces pulled it out. We'll talk about that in a little while. The Indianapolis 500 was going to be a historic day in Indianapolis today, potentially, and that potential has taken a big-time nosedive. We'll talk about that in a little while, thanks to Roger Penske. The Las Vegas Aviators, the best team in the Pacific Coast Conference, and they play at the best
PCL, Pacific Coast League.
Yeah.
What is a PC Pacific Coast Conference? I think that's an old college basketball conference.
An old college football conference, yeah, too, at one point.
I think like Long Beach State, and I think UNLV was in there.
They might have been. But, but yeah, the Aviators, man, absolutely incredible what they're doing. They are tearing it up out there. The shame of that is, as much as it seems like they are the best team in the Pacific Coast League, but chances of them winning it all, you never know, just because they'll get cherry-picked at the end of the season, and especially their parent club on a losing skid, a bad one. We'll talk about that, too, a little bit later on. And Major League Baseball, man, there's also a really, really hot in Major League Baseball, and they've got the best record in the league, and all that is coming your way. That's what's on tap. If you are looking to buy a home or to refinance the home you currently own, contact RCG Home Loans, powered by Citywide Home Mortgage today. Call 702-964-5720 for details on current home financing options and up-to-the-minute interest rates. Again, 702-964-5720 for all questions. Mortgages, that is RCG group powered by Citywide Home Mortgage. And we'll jump right into things, man. It has been kind of a whirlwind lately as sports wind down, but you've got the conference championships in both basketball and hockey right now. Some of my favorite time of the year right now. Just kind of a shame we're not talking about the Vegas Golden Knights, which we will talk about right now, but not talking about them being as part of the Final Four, where I think all of us thought they had a really good shot at least to be here, and they're not. But 2025 free agency, as soon as the season ends, you start saying, we do it every year, who is going to be a Vegas Golden Knight next year and who is not going to be? It's a question for, you know, it's a legitimate question. And, there is a number of unrestricted free agents. I'll start right at the top. A guy they picked up, Chris Late, before the trading deadline. An original misfit, Riley Smith, 34 years old now, going into next season, 35. They picked him up. I think he's been in the league like 13 years now in the National Hockey League, which is a long time since he was like a 21-year-old kid. Riley Smith, $5 million hit against the salary cap. Does he stick around?
Not for that price, he doesn't. Listen, I think at the end of the day, I think if Riley wants to be a Golden Knight and the Golden Knights want Riley Smith, I don't think the money really matters. I think Riley's willing, from the sound of it, and you know, obviously I don't know Riley personally, and I don't know what he's looking for. But to me, it sounds like Riley would take a very, very heavily hometown discounted offer from the Golden Knights. I think he wants to be here very, very badly. And if the team wants him, I think they keep him. My guess is Riley Smith will be a member of the Golden Knights next season. I don't think he will be playing at $5 million a year, though.
Chris, it's funny because normally I'm the predictor of doom. I agree with you 100%. I think they'll get him at a bargain price. As we all know, he's one of the guys that left that didn't sell his house, which meant he planned on retiring in Las Vegas anyway.
Yeah, he made a comment that, you know, he has boxes that he hasn't opened in the 2 years since he brought him back
with him.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what's in them. So I think we've all been there too, right? Because yeah. I mean, anyone who's moved knows that you pack stuff away and then you're like, you forget about stuff. Like I'm going through that now and I'm opening up all these old boxes. I'm like, what the hell is in there? You know, oh, I don't need that. Right in the donation pile. So, but yeah, Riley, my guess is he will be back. If I had to give you a percentage, I'm about 75% sure that Riley Smith will be a member of the Golden Knights next season.
Yeah, I like that as well. Some other names to really think about. Probably the biggest next name, just because he's been around for a long time. He has really established himself as one of the solid top six defensemen with this team. Can play defense on first, second, or third defensive line. He's a big guy, and not necessarily known as an enforcer, but not a guy that a lot of people mess with because he is so big, and that's Nicholas Hague. He is a restricted free agent. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but what I do know it does mean is he's restricted, but there is a possibility they could move him.
Well, what that means is that another team can offer, like, let's just hypothetically say the Winnipeg Jets want Nick Hague. I don't know if they have the space. It doesn't matter. I'm just using that as an example. They want Nick Hague. They can offer sheet Nick Hague a contract up to a certain amount of money based on years and tenure in the league and all that. And the Golden Knights have the option to match. If they don't match it and Nick Hague goes and plays with the Winnipeg Jets, the Winnipeg Jets are entitled to give the Golden Knights compensation for that. There's some chatter that Nick Hague, being a restricted free agent, may get offer sheeted by another team. And as Kelly McCrimmon was quick to point out, we have the option to match that offer. So that leads me to believe that Nick Hague, who is really the one guy from that first draft class that's panned out for this team. Obviously, Nick Suzuki turned out to be a really, really good player, but with someone else. So Of the first four guys that this team took in the amateur draft, Nick Hague is the only one who is still a member of this team. He's the one who's won a Stanley Cup. But I don't know. My feeling is Nick Hague is young.
Yeah.
I think he's a pretty good player. I like his physicality. Bruce Cassidy mentioned that he's learned how to play within his body a little bit this year. Because we're bigger defensemen, sometimes it's a challenge because these little pests, they get inside of you, and sometimes it's difficult to learn how to prevent that. But Nick has learned. I think this was his best year. I think he really came into his own this year. I think Nick Hague is a very desirable player for a lot of other teams in the league. That being said, the Golden Knights do have the option to match. My guess is Nick Hague is a Golden Knight, and I think with him being a UFA next year, my guess is he gets a multi-year deal, and he won't hit free agency till probably he's in his 30s.
We're on the same page again. He's just about 26 and a half years old.
Well, here's the potential roadblock. The Golden Knights have Caden Korzak, who they drafted, I think, in 2019.
Yep.
He played in the playoffs. He held his own. He played fairly well. If you sign Nick Hague, you don't really have a spot for Caden Korzak. So there is a chance. I would say it's a smaller chance because I think this team, the Golden Knights, they're not into sentimental and, you know, if they don't believe that
Caden, it's business, man.
Yes,
it's all business.
And listen, I don't know Kelly. I don't know what's in his head. But my guess is if they feel Caden Korzak is ready to be a 82-game-a-year defenseman in the NHL,
it'll be something to think about.
It gives them something to think about.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Nick Hague, last year, $2.3 million is his contract.
He's going to get a bump.
There's no question he's going to make more than that. Some other guys to think about, Chris, Alexander Holz, another guy. He's 23 years old, under $2 million a year
restricted,
for him.
Restricted free agent.
He is a restricted free agent where
he'll
they can
back.
Match. I think he'll be back as well.
I don't think anyone offer sheets Alexander Holz.
What about Victor Olofsson now? He's going to be 30 next year when he starts playing. He's a little over $1 million against the salary cap.
Yeah, that's one I don't think.
I think he's gone.
I've
got crossed on my list.
Yeah,
he's unrestricted this year.
I like Vic. Unfortunately, he did spend a bunch of time on the injured list this year.
And 30 years old, man. For some reason, when you hit that number,
he had a productive year.
He did.
And he fits the mold of what they need, a guy who shoots first and doesn't really ask questions. He had that one game in the playoffs where I think he had 9 shots. But I think they probably want a guy who they know they're going to get 82 games out of, and they probably want a guy who has that mentality but puts
it in
a little bit.
And can be around for a while, Chris, and yeah. I think that's why Victor's gone.
I think that's a position where you've got guys
like, you know, for instance, like Cole Schwind. I mean, he's 24 years old, plays the same position. Not the same player, I understand that, but he's a young guy.
He'll be back.
And he's definitely coming back, and I mean, he's
restricted free agent.
A lot of teams
had the opportunity to pick him up on waivers last year. If they wanted him, they would have picked him up. So I think he'll be back.
No, I agree. I like him back. Another guy that doesn't see a lot of time up here, gets his opportunities. But a guy like Lucas Cormier, only 23 years old, about $800,000. I mean, he is a restricted free agent again. Do you think they bring a guy like him back?
Well, he's a guy who spends a ton of time in Henderson.
He does.
You know, they do need players down there.
Depth
players.
At the defense.
You know, he's a guy who's been in the system a long time. So I can't imagine a guy like him. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think all these Henderson guys, I mean, I don't know their roster inside and out, but my guess is most of them will be back.
Another right winger. How about Ronberg? He's an unrestricted free agent this year.
No, he's still restricted, but he's in a special
category. No, I'm pretty
sure
he's an unrestricted free agent this
year.
He's in a
weird category.
$750,000. It's cheap.
My guess is he's actually playing for Denmark right now in the World Championships.
Yep.
He scored a big goal the other night for them.
I think they keep him.
I think they keep him.
He's 26 years old.
He's a guy who has the ability to bounce back and forth between Henderson and Vegas. My guess is maybe 1 year deal, and then he becomes a UFA next year, and they see, you know, at that point what's behind him in Henderson. But they know he's a guy they could bring up here and rely on. And if you're going to let guys like Olofsson walk, you're going to need guys who can come up and play from Henderson because we know not everyone's playing 82 games.
Two other players, Chris, that I would like to see stay here. One I think is going to be gone. Tanner Pearson's going to be 33 years old next year. He's only cost him $750,000 this last year, a little bit more than that. I think Pearson's gone. He's an unrestricted free agent. I don't think they're going to keep him around. And I want you to comment on two guys. And a guy that I really liked, but he is going to be 33 in the middle of next season. Brandon Saad, who I think played tremendously well in the postseason for them. The numbers don't tell the story. He didn't score a lot. He didn't get a lot of points. But he hustled in every game. He was always one of the workhorses. Played hard, unrestricted free agent. But I think his age, $1.5 million, I don't think he's around either next year.
That's tough for me because I think he fit with the team very well and very quickly. I think he's a good guy to have around some of your younger players. But he took a pretty – his situation was very unusual in that he was sent to waivers by the St. Louis Blues, and rather than, you know, collecting his paycheck, he asked to be bought out so he could pick where he went and played. And he chose to come here because he believed that there was an opportunity to win. He came on a heavily, heavily discounted deal. That's a tough one because I think Brandon Saad fits with this team. I think he's a good player still. I think he's a productive player. That one, I honestly have no idea.
I'm going to say he's gone, but I hope he's not. I'm right there with you. I hope he's a guy that they end up retaining. And then, Chris, of course, one goaltender is locked up. Of course, Aiden Hill is the goaltender on this team. But you have two others, one that hasn't been mentioned in a long time. He's pretty much out of hockey. I don't think we'll ever see him play again. He's going to be 34 years old. And I'm talking about Robin Leonard, if you forgot his name. Yes, he is still a member of this team. Yes, he is a $5 million hit against the cap, an unrestricted free agent. And, of course, Ilya Samsonov. I don't think anyone expected a great deal of him, but he's 28 years old, Chris, almost a $2 million hit to the salary cap. He also is an unrestricted free agent. Are either one of these guys' names associated with the Golden Knights next year?
No.
Okay, I agree.
Samsonov, I think Akir Schmidt, I think we know that they value him. They think he was, despite what transpired in Henderson, he was really good with this organization. He was the man who was backing up Aiden Hill in the playoffs. So Schmid is going to be the backup for the foreseeable future. And listen, they've got a couple young guys in Henderson, Carl Lindbaum being one, who I think is going to be a good player for the Silver Knights. He was really good last season, came over from Sweden. He's very, very, very young. The one problem with him is he doesn't have the size that this team really seems to desire in that position. But, you know, you can work around that, I think, if you're the Golden Knights. So I think they've got a pretty solid backup in Schmid, and I think behind him they will probably go with Lindbaum, and I think they've got a kid named Cameron Whitehead, who is also likely to be in Henderson, and Jesper Vikman, who played a bit for the team up in Lake Tahoe, the ECHL franchise. So goaltender position, I don't foresee them doing anything.
Except letting the unrestricted free agents go.
Yeah, that's it, yep.
And Leonard, man, that's been, you know.
That's been a done issue for a long time.
And finally this year they get to alleviate themselves of that. And it's been a big hit against the cap, which opens up a lot of space. That's $5 million. So, you know, again, out of the free agents, like I said, I hope they keep Brendan Saad. I think he's gone. I think Olofsson is gone as well. I just do. I think Tanner Pearson's another one that you'll see go. Those are my predictions. Riley Smith, I think, hangs around, like Chris said. I think he'll take a big pay cut and stay with the Vegas Golden Knights. He's got 1 or 2 years left in him at best. He, like I said, he'll be 34 years old this season. I think guys like Alexander Holt stick around. We mentioned Lucas Cormier. I think his age keeps him around. Cole Schwint, same thing. A guy that they're going to want down the road. And another guy, Jonas Rönnberg, I think the upside with him is tremendous. He's just hitting his prime at 26 years old. I think we see all those guys back between Henderson and Las Vegas next year. Talking about the playoffs, and I want to get into the NHL playoffs, man. You know, it's exciting. I knew I was going to love the Dallas, the repeat, the deja vu matchup between Dallas and Edmonton. Knew this was going to be a good series. Dallas makes that dramatic comeback in game one, and you think, oh, no, Dallas, really, that's going to be the game that cements it for them. Especially the way they got to Stuart Skinner late in that game. And then what happens in game two? Well, Stuart Skinner has his third shutout in four games, and the Edmonton Oilers now are not at that series. series at one game apiece going back to Edmonton. Edmonton, a very, very tough team. And to me, the one team that you absolutely do not want to let get on the power play because of the firepower that they have. When you've got two of the top five players in the league, including one of those two being the best player in the world right now, not a team you want to let be, you don't want to be shorthanded against. And Dallas has paid the price when they've been shorthanded. Stuart Skinner, again, he's not facing a multitude of shots, but to say he hasn't done his job would be a terrible thing to say. The guy has done his job. Three shutouts in four games. I don't think anyone could have predicted that, especially in the postseason where the speed picks up, the intensity picks up. Stuart Skinner has been spectacular for the Edmonton Oilers, the biggest surprise for them. And if he continues to play this way, they are going to be a very tough out. And on the other side, we saw yesterday the Florida Panthers take a stranglehold on the Eastern Conference. And, you know, it's just shocking. You know, they entered yesterday, gave six wins away from a Stanley Cup final repeat, two wins away from their third straight Stanley Cup final appearance. And Carolina, you know, that they've gotten swept in the playoffs in 2 years, 2 years ago by, you know, by the same thing by Florida. They have now got, which is almost mind-blowing, Carolina has lost 15 straight conference final games. And if they lose 16 straight, that is four straight times they have been bumped from the Eastern Conference final by a sweep. Almost unheard of. Carolina's got to get some pride and find a way to win this game, because I can't believe that they're going to get swept potentially for the fourth straight time. And I see it happening. Florida is clicking on all cylinders. They are healthy. It's cool to see a couple of ex-Vegas Golden Knights on Florida. You've got Tomas Nosek, and you've also got, what's his name, Nate Schmidt, both on Florida. It's kind of cool to see the two of them there and playing and having a chance to go for a Stanley Cup. Neither one of them got a ring. They weren't on the team that won the Stanley Cup final here a couple of years ago, so it'd be cool to see those two get a ring, although I'm getting tired of the Florida Panthers. Bobrovsky, again, one of the best playoff goaltenders in my lifetime. I mean, this guy, just every year he rises up and plays better and better and better as the season goes along. Here they finish in the four hole, and this team could very well win their second consecutive Stanley Cup. And again, it looks like almost for sure, Chris, they are going to their third straight Stanley Cup final. Maurice, a hell of a coach, first of all. Let's give credit where credit is due. And secondly, this is just a very good, well-organized team that plays together. They've got great depth. And the one thing you want to be at this time of the year, they're healthy.
Yeah, they're a really good team. I kind of thought that they would have a difficult time with Tampa. They proved me wrong in a very short amount of time. And then they absolutely destroyed Toronto in those final two games in Toronto, right? They fall down 2-0 in that series, and they then turned it on and won four of the next five against the Leafs. So that was one where you're like, they went into game seven with Toronto. There was never a doubt who was going to win that game. And Carolina has really, they have lost, I believe it's now 12 straight?
No, it's
13 straight?
It's actually 15 straight.
15
conference
straight
championship games.
You're right, because they swept.
They've been swept three times.
Three straight times. They're on the verge of being swept the fourth straight time.
In the conference final.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
And I know in 2009 they lost to the Penguins. Obviously nobody from this rendition of the Carolina Hurricanes was around then, with the exception of Jordan Staal, who was actually playing for Pittsburgh in that game, or that series. But the last three are on Rod Brindamore and the core that they have, guys like Sasha or Sebastian Aho, Jordan Martinook. This is a team that they made light work of the New Jersey Devils. They made light work of the Washington Capitals. And here you are going into this series thinking, they may have a chance. Nope, no chance.
And blaming Frederik Andersen, I understand making a change.
He was their best player in, through the first two rounds.
I don't understand. I mean, obviously it'll go back to him in game four, but I don't think you go on the road and you start the backup. It's not his fault, and you're sending a strange mess to the team. You're mixing things up, but I don't think that's where you mix things up, Chris.
Well, Freddie Anderson's not the guy going out there and trying to score goals for the team. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. I mean,
you know, none of these games have even been close.
No.
And that's the worst part for Florida. They're probably. I would not be shocked if they close it out tomorrow, and sweep that series, and then they rest for, you know, because
a real good team.
They've got some guys banged up, and you hope that Dallas and Edmonton beat the crap out of each other for seven games, and it looks like that's a real possibility. So, I predicted that the Panthers would win the Stanley Cup. At the start of the second round, I said by far and away they're the best team. I still believe that. I just think they've got everything that you need. They made great moves at the deadline, bringing in Seth Jones and Brad Marchand. I think that's an organization. Bill Zito, their general manager, he's one of the very best.
Did you see yesterday mixing it up, Nate Schmidt and William Carrier mixing it up a little
bit
yesterday?
That's pretty funny, yeah.
That
two guys cool. whose lockers used to be
right next to each
yes,
other.
Yes, right next to each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. I really believe that Florida is – they're destined. And they came here – Two years ago, and they were a bit of a surprise. They were the eighth seed. They had the first-year coach in Paul Maurice. They had just made some moves with Matthew Tkachuk. And they've got they went from being one of those franchises that you know exists to one of those franchises that's letting you know that they're a legit contender. But they were overwhelmed by the Golden Knights in that series. They got their ass kicked. What do they do next year? They came back. They knew they were good enough to make a run to the final. They just had to get into the final, the playoffs fairly healthy. They did that. They blew through everybody. And then they went to the game seven, and they ended up winning that after being up 3-0 against Edmonton. I don't think that would be the case this year. I think if they happen to play Edmonton again, I think they're going to crush the Oilers. I just think they're so much better.
And Stuart Skinner's going to come down to earth at
some point.
I
just don't trust him. I don't care what he's done.
I agree.
It's a case of at some point, he's going to have one of those games where you're like, yeah, this is why he was benched.
Yep, no doubt.
And you can't go to the backup because he's still hurt.
He is who we thought he was, and that's going to happen eventually. But I just want to say, Spencer, I guess, somehow is listening to the show. He is on a cruise at the Mexican Riviera. He'll be in Cozumel tomorrow. So, Spencer, enjoy yourself, man. I'm glad you were able to find the Wi-Fi and get involved. So, appreciate you. I won't ask for any of your thoughts. You enjoy your honeymoon, man, and take care of that. But, yeah, I think Florida also is really good. And as I mentioned a minute ago, you know, it all comes down to the last line of defense when you get into the late into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the bottom line is Bobrovsky is one of the best in the game. I say he's one of the best postseason goaltenders I've ever seen. He just gets better as the postseason goes along. He shuts the door on a regular basis. He made some incredible saves again yesterday where Carolina might have been able to find their way back into the game. Florida is going to be a very tough out. But, Chris, where I disagree with you is I do think that Edmonton can beat Florida, as I think Dallas can beat them. I think these three teams are playing at a very elite level right now. What Florida would like to have is to get that win and have a good week to rest and maybe hope for Dallas and Edmonton to go seven games and beat the hell out of each other. And that would probably bode the best for Florida, but I think either way we're looking at a great Stanley Cup final. Whoever faces Florida in that, which I think Carolina's not winning four straight games against this Florida team. I don't even think they'll win tomorrow. It's in Florida, and I do think Florida wraps it up, but it should be a hell of a Stanley Cup final, and I'm still looking very forward to the Western Conference final. That resumes today, and you will see today the Edmonton Oilers will go against the Dallas Stars. That game in Edmonton, it is game three, first game Edmonton series knotted up at one game apiece. I think Dallas gets this win. Stuart Skinner, man, after three shutouts in four games, I think they open him up like a can of cream corn today, and this guy gets beaten badly, but we'll see what happens. Good series. Let's jump into fact this. We don't have our intro, so I'm just going to let you know it is a fact. Anthony Edwards, who is 23 years old, scored 30 points in yesterday's blowout win in Game 3 versus the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference Finals. Unbelievable, 143-101, a 42-point win by the Minnesota Timberwolves. This is actually incredible, since it is the Ant-Man's 15th playoff game out of the 40 playoff games he's played in total in his career, where he has scored 30-plus points or more, 30 points or more in a game. Putting it in perspective, it is also a fact that all other Timberwolves players in franchise histories have combined for 15 total 30-point playoff games. I mean, Anthony Edwards, when this guy plays at his top of the game, you know, you always say this player is the best in the game. I'm not going to say the Ant-Man is the best in basketball. I will say on days he is the best in basketball. He's definitely a top five player. He can absolutely lift up this Minnesota Timberwolves franchise. We saw last year as they went deep. They've gone deep again this year. A couple of upsets already, and now they've got a chance to knock off the best team in basketball. Chris, I want to ask you, I don't know if you saw the game yesterday or had a chance to watch it. I couldn't watch the whole game. I watched the highlights. I started watching it, and I turned it off. But when you lose by 42 points... By 42 points. Now, granted, it was in Minnesota, and I'll tell you what, the Target Center can get really loud and obnoxious in that place. But when you lose by 42 points, even though you were down 2-0 going in, does that change anything, or do you think OKC, they're young, they're hungry, they've got one of the top three players in the NBA. Do you think they just recovered from this? This was just a bad game? Or do you think this potentially could be a type of a cancer that where Minnesota says, hey, we just pounded this team by over 40 points, and maybe they make it a series?
Well, I think they will make it a series. I mean, listen, the T-Wolves are a really good team, and they were in game two until a late run in the third quarter by OKC. I think it was like a 13-0 run, kind of put the game out of reach. They played really well in the fourth quarter. The final score was a little respectable, I think, considering they were down by like 25 points heading into the fourth. I think the T-Wolves have proven that they have a pretty good level of compete. I think they're well coached. I think Anthony Edwards is a solid player. What they really needed was they needed Julius Randle to get going, because he had been pretty quiet in games one and two. And, you know, I think you look at what he did yesterday. He ended up scoring 24 points for them. I like Jaden McDaniels. I think he's a pretty solid role player, guy who has the ability to hit some threes for you. I'd like to call him Run DMC, because DMC and Run DMC was McDaniels. So he's Run DMC to me. But they're a good team. They're a really good team. They got some good contributions off the bench. Alexander Walker had a big game for them. And Anthony Edwards probably could have gone for more, but the game was a complete laugher.
Yeah, let him rest.
So, listen, OKC will bounce back. This is a team that only lost 14 games in the regular season. They're really good. They got nothing from SGA last night.
Yeah. 14 points for SGA. I think it was one other guy off the bench had 14 points as well. And other than that, nobody scored over 14 for OKC. You just don't see that happening. This is a really good young basketball team. And defensively, Minnesota really closed them down yesterday. SGA, you know, is not going to have many games like this. But still, Chris, it is a concern, because Minnesota does have that playoff experience from last year and understands how to win in the playoffs. And I'll tell you what, I think they win at the Target Center again in Game 4, and that's going to knock the series.
Then we've got a series, yeah. You know, what's the saying? You don't have a series until someone wins on the road. Well, this is a series that could go 7 games, and neither team could win on the road.
Yep.
Listen, I think that the Thunder are going to win the series. I think they're the better team. I think their superstar is better than Minnesota's superstar. But I don't think the difference is drastic. Like, this is a game that could come down to someone winning Game 5. Like, I think if they do go back... It's so cliche, and I'm taking the easy way out, but if it goes back to Minnesota or to OKC and it's not at a 2-2, whoever wins game five is going to win the series.
Yeah, it would sure look that way. I think OKC wins it back there, and I do think it's going to go seven games, and I think OKC wins it in seven. On the other side, where you talk about home court being such an advantage in the Western Conference final, Chris, what about the Eastern? I don't know what is with the New York Knicks. This team, which blows my mind, is 3-5 at home at Madison Square Garden, typically one of the toughest places to play in the NBA. You get guys in the floor, got celebrities that jump around and yell at officials, and somehow...
Not a Spike Lee fan.
I'm a Spike Lee fan as far as his intelligence goes, as far as his basketball fanship goes. No, I don't like the fact that a celebrity can make noise. I mean, you don't see Jack Nicholson in L.A. screaming at the officials on the floor. You see him screaming and pulling his hair out, but I've never seen him up yelling at officials and getting away with it. Spike Lee somehow has. But the whole thing is with this Knicks team. This Knicks team went into Detroit. They won three games in the first round of the playoffs. They won there. They were solid. They won in Boston, okay? They won in Boston, again, a couple of games up front. They lost a home game to Boston. They lost two home games to Detroit, and now they've lost two home games to the Indiana Pacers. Can they go to Indiana? I mean, Halliburton, this team's playing ridiculous, and I'll give you that. Oh, Indiana, man, the comeback victories they have, that was putrid in game two, by the way New York just gave that game away to Indiana at the end. But, Chris, Indiana is no slouch. Siakam is a really good basketball player. This team can play with anybody, and I think based on where they're at right now, if Indiana ended up winning the NBA title, which, by the way, I don't think they do, but no one would be shocked anymore. The odds have dropped way down. What is it going to take for New York to go into Indiana and continue to be the road warriors they've been throughout these playoffs?
Well, I think the problem for New York is, I don't know if we've ever seen a series that was lost in 3 minutes, but the Knicks lost this series in the final 3 minutes of game one. Inexcusable. There's so many adjectives you could use to describe that as a Knicks fan. They lost the series.
16 points up, Chris. How does that happen?
That's and with a guy like Thibodeau, who is a defensive-minded coach, you know, you let a couple of role players. It wasn't Halliburton who went off in that fourth quarter. It was their role players. And then Halliburton was phenomenal on that. I mean, listen, that final shot, that goes in maybe once out of every 25 shots.
Unbelievable.
Where he hit the back iron and the ball probably shot 10 feet straight up in the air and came down and was nothing but net. The move he made, thank goodness he was on the line when he shot it. Otherwise, the game doesn't even go to overtime. But the Knicks are in trouble. And mentally, I think it broke them to lose that game. They put in a pretty soft effort in game two. I think the Pacers are going to win this series. It disgusts me because I can't stand them. And having to listen to Reggie Miller. Listen, I respect Reggie Miller as a player. I like him as a broadcaster. He comes here to do the Mountain West Conference championship game every year. Listening to him as a Knicks fan, as a guy who doesn't cover, and I can be a fan, and I am a fan, it hurts. The glee that you can hear from Reggie Miller every time the Pacers, and in that fourth quarter, I almost had to mute my television. But Kevin Harlan and Stan Van Gundy are so good that I want to listen to what they have to say. But I try to tune out.
Stan Van Gundy's a Knicks fan.
Well, but he's not a Knicks legend.
No,
you know?
No, no.
Him and his brother coach the Knicks.
I know that.
So,
I know
you
that.
Know, but he probably does have a spot for them, and I think he's actually
from
New York.
No, but I agree with you, Chris, that you listen to Anthony Miller, and he absolutely is. I mean, it's you know what, though? In the same respect, I've had transversely Indiana Pacers fans say how much they love seeing the pain of Stephen A. Smith, who is a gigantic Knicks fan, and he's whining like an unwanted redheaded stepchild daily about the Knicks play. The thing is, he is keeping it real.
Yeah, listen, Reggie, I personally, like, I could sit and listen to him on any game because I think he's a great,
very knowledgeable.
He's very knowledgeable. Yeah. His ability, you know, there's some former players where you're like, yeah, these guys suck and they're only in there because they're former players. Reggie's a guy who can really break it down.
Grant Hill as well.
Grant Hill's great.
Grant Hill's
well, anytime you listen to Grant Hill speak, you know why he's on
no
broadcast
question.
Because
extremely
he's
intelligent.
Yes, he went to Duke, and he was a guy who he wasn't a one and done at Duke.
No,
you know, so you know, it's funny because I liked Reggie as a player, except when he played the Knicks. I wanted to see the Pacers one time get through against Jordan. It never happened. You know, I the Knicks are in trouble. They lost. They may win tonight, but they're not winning both games in Indiana. I would be shocked if this series went seven. My initial thought was Knicks would win in six, and I was going to be, you know, ecstatic that they were going to go to the NBA final, where I thought they would probably lose to OKC. But Brian, I think they lost that series in the last 3 minutes of game one, and then they're up in overtime, and they had the ball, and they're up four, and they have the ball, and they turn it over. I think it was Nesmith comes down and hits a three, and all of a sudden, you had an opportunity to push it to a six, maybe 7 point lead, and it's cut down to one. So they're in trouble. Jalen Brunson can't do it on his own. And
Karl Anthony Towns has got to step up and play better.
He hasn't really had a great series.
No, he's got to play better.
Josh Hart hasn't been great for them in the series.
He scored 24 points in the big loss in game two, but either way, he's not playing his defensive
basketball.
Like Deuce
McBride, he's a role player for them. You know,
Bridges has got to play better.
OG Anunoby was pretty good in game two.
Yep.
But the biggest problem I've found in through games one and two for the Knicks is every time there's a crucial possession for the Pacers, Indiana finds a way to score. And that's the difference. The Knicks have not been able to make that one big stop that they needed to. They're down late in the fourth quarter. They could not. Siakam was that guy is so good.
Yeah, he really
is. And we forget that he was an integral part of, because, you know, it was Kyle Lowry and obviously Kawhi Leonard who were kind of the faces of that Raptors team.
No doubt about it.
But Pascal Siakam, he's been a really good player for a really long time.
He's a good two-way player, Chris. He's extremely sound defensively.
Nuts.
But he can score.
He went crazy in game two.
Yeah, he can score. And
that's
a
good team.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at their record down the stretch, I think they were 22-5.
Yeah. They were playing good at the best part of the season.
And listen, you've got Rick Carlisle, a guy who I know you are a fan of. He's a damn good coach, and he's been a damn good coach for a really long time. I don't think they're going to beat OKC to win the title, but if they got Minnesota somehow wins this series, I could see the Pacers winning. That's a series that I think the NBA is probably begging for the Knicks to come back, because when you look at television markets, you've got Minnesota, Indianapolis, and OKC. Casual fan.
You need New York.
Laker fan, Knicks fan, Bull fan. They may watch because they hate the Pacers, but they don't care about Minnesota or OKC.
No.
You think people in Seattle are thrilled that OKC is on the verge of making an NBA final? No.
Maybe, probably not.
No. So for television numbers, I'm one of those guys, I don't really care about markets. Like for me, I watch the final because it's the final, and you know, I won't be able to watch any more NBA after, you know, whenever the final ends. So I'll be watching, but I'll be watching with a lot more interest if the Knicks are there. It's certainly a lot more intriguing to me than if it's the Pacers. But I think, you know, if you're an NBA fan, you're going to watch. It's grabbing the casual fan. The one selling point the NBA has, and I don't know if they're going to use it or not, but if the Pacers do get there, someone's going to win their first NBA title.
Yeah.
And that's you know, we've seen a bunch of that. You know, Denver recently, I know the Bucks didn't win their first, but their first in like 50 years when they won with Giannis.
No, it's really exciting. I'm hoping, Chris, I'm not 100% sold that Indianapolis or Indiana is going to win this series. I know they're up 2-0. I think if the Knicks can find a way to win today, and that's the one thing about the Knicks, they've been the best road warriors in the NBA in this postseason. So they got to find a way to win 2 games in Indy. It is going to be really hard. Halliburton, as you mentioned, Pascal Siakam has been, you know, he's just such a good two-way player. But the Knicks have to get back to what Thibodeau does best, and that is playing defensive basketball. And Karl Anthony Towns has got to show up. He is such an integral part. He is so difficult on both ends of the floor when he's playing his best basketball. Again, his range for a guy 7'1" is uncanny and unprecedented. But he's going to have to really step up. Jalen Brunson, as you mentioned, can't do it himself. It's going to take the other role players of the Knicks, Bridges and Hart, that are going to have big games as well. But they definitely have to win. It all starts today in Game 3 against the Pacers. It is a must-win for the Knicks. And matter of fact, I think both games in Indiana must win. They got to get this back to a three-game series. But NBA playoffs should be pretty exciting. And sticking with basketball, the Las Vegas Aces, 1 year removed from winning back-to-back WNBA titles, giving Vegas technically their first ever professional franchise title when they won their first title before the Vegas Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup for the first time. This is a good Aces team. It's a different team. And I'll tell you, I went and saw them on Friday night play the Washington Mystics. A lot of people thought, I mean, the odds makers had the Vegas Las Vegas Aces as 14 or 15 point favorites in this game. Literally, they were losing by 12 at halftime. They were still losing by 12 at the end of the third quarter. And they ended up winning the basketball game by 3 points at the very end. It was unbelievable. Jewel Lloyd, just buried
that's
a triple.
That's what you bring her in for.
You do, but you know, it was so weird watching the Aces. I don't know that I've ever felt this for another team when you see something, but it's like Kelsey Plum is just part of the fabric of this team. And not seeing her out there, knowing she's playing somewhere else, you know, it's almost, you know, next to Asia Wilson, I don't know a player you could lose that would have the impact of a Kelsey Plum. And not just on the court, but off the court, she was such a spokesman for this team and kind of one of the faces of this franchise. It's bizarre watching them play without her.
Well, she was part of the team when they came, I believe, from San Antonio. Yeah.
She was the number one draft pick of this team at one point.
I don't know if she still is, but the all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball.
Washington. Yeah.
So, yeah, she was part of the fabric. I think it's always been Asia Wilson's team, and it, you know, she will forever be the face of the franchise. She's clearly a Hall of Fame player. I still think she's the best player in the WNBA, although I think there's some people nipping at her heels. But you know, I think it is weird. Like, to me, you know, Jewel Lloyd is going to be a good player for this team.
Yeah.
It took a couple games for her to kind of find her spot, but you know, that's a defining moment. And for it to happen in game three of your tenure into a franchise, I think that bodes well going forward. I think they're still gonna struggle with New York. I think that the Lynx are a pretty good team as well. Minnesota's got a solid group of players. And then I think the Aces and Indiana are going to – there they are again, right? Indiana. Ugh. But they are going to be right there battling, I think, Minnesota for that second spot. And by the way, can I just say, is it possible to be both a fan of Caitlin Clark –
and Angel Reese.
And just respect
I think if you're a WNBA fan, and it's funny that you brought that up, because if you saw, there was a picture posted in the paper with LeBron James with Caitlin Clark, and they're obviously friends and talking. And Jewel Lloyd has to chime in and say, well, you know, Michael Jordan never lost an NBA final. And, you know, it was a shot at LeBron James. First of all, LeBron James, you know, it's an argument you'll have forever. Who's the greatest NBA player? I'll always say Michael Jordan.
But after that,
how can you not? He went to 8 straight finals with 3 different NBA franchises.
Yeah.
Won half of those. Won championships with half of them. He's won an NBA championship with 3 different NBA teams right now. To say that LeBron James, that you are not going to have him in that conversation, first of all, is ridiculous. And Angel Reese, why are you doing this? I mean, for God's sakes, number one, Caitlin Clark is definitely a shot in the arm and a boost in the WNBA. You've got 2 or 3 franchises now that are turning a profit. Nobody turned a profit before this woman became a WNBA player. Now you have them turning a profit. I'm sorry, Angel. Caitlin Clark got a $20 million marketing promotion with Nike, okay? Sorry she didn't, you didn't. But with the sour grapes already, Chris. Angel Reese is one of the best players in this game. She's going to go on to be a superstar in the WNBA. Why do you continue to have this rivalry when you can see Caitlin Clark wants no part of it? She doesn't give a crap. She really doesn't. Now, I like the hard foul on Angel Reese in that game. I thought it was cool that she shows that, you know what, I'm not going to be intimidated by you.
Yeah.
But in the same respect, enough is enough already. Well, it's a rivalry that's unnecessary.
No, see, I think the rivalry is good for the WNBA.
It's mean, Chris. It's one thing to have a rivalry.
That's a mean rivalry. That's the issue, right?
It's the caveat in it.
It doesn't have to be, like, they don't have to be best friends. They don't have to even be
friends. No, it's like Larry Bird and Magic was a great rivalry.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, those two guys turned out to be great friends.
Great friends.
You know, I think they're very different players. They do different things. Like, to me, Angel Reese, like, when I see people taking shots, like, especially a guy like Jason Whitlock.
Seriously.
Like, you don't have to take a shot at Angel Reese. But, like, I think you also have to respect Caitlin Clark's game. Like, I like both of them. I enjoy watching both of them play. It doesn't have to be this.
Well, Angel Reese makes it like somehow you get the feeling she doesn't respect Caitlin Clark's game.
Well,
I don't know if it's that, Chris. It just feels like it.
I think part of it is Angel Reese won a college basketball championship at LSU.
Yes, she did.
And Caitlin Clark didn't win at Iowa.
No, she didn't.
LSU beat Iowa in the national championship game. But all the talk was about Caitlin Clark. So that was a slight at Angel Reese and LSU. Now, that's not Caitlin Clark's fault.
Correct.
That's the fault of the media and the people who were riding, I would say, the coattails of Caitlin Clark. But that was 2 years ago. They're both professional players now. And listen, Angel Reese had her own meal at McDonald's, right? Quarter pounder and orange soda or whatever.
Angel Reese.
But like, you know, they're both very different players. I just want to, and it's not going to happen because there's way too much noise on both sides. I want to see a WNBA where the rivalry is because of what's taking place on the court. Yeah. And it's not being made. It's not being
coming
made
across as sour grapes.
Well, I'm just sick of it being made to be a race issue by agitators on both sides of the aisle. I just want to watch and respect both of their games,
no doubt,
which is what I can do. But I want to see more people do that. Like, we don't have to have this stupid rivalry of, oh, well, it's because Caitlin Clark is white, or oh, it's because MAGA loves her, or oh, it's because Angel Reese is, you know, it's so stupid. It's a basketball rivalry. I want to enjoy it for what's taking place on the court. And I'm with you. I like that Caitlin Clark was like, you know what? I'm not going to let you push me around. And unfortunately, that moment has been turned into this massive controversy by people like Whitlock. Or that other idiot, Clay Travis. It's funny to me that this is where we're at. Like, just watch the game and enjoy the game. Yeah. I'm fans of both players, and I feel like you don't have to choose. It's so dumb that this is where we are. Let the WNBA grow as a sport in this country. There's more young girls watching the WNBA today than there were 2 years ago because of both of these
players.
I'll
tell you what, Michelob Alt Arena has been sold out.
That place rocks.
Yeah, it's been sold out like 20 straight games or something now, which is really cool. You haven't seen this. And again, part of this growth is this rivalry between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. But Caitlin Clark really has put I'm not going to say put the WNBA on the map. That starts all kinds of other controversy, but has brought a lot more recognition and notoriety to the WNBA. She deserves credit for that. As Chris just stated, this should not be a race issue. It should be an issue between two great basketball players in their league and in their conference. And one thing I'll say, Angel Reese, LSU was a basketball was known for women's basketball before you got there. Caitlin Clark put Iowa women's basketball on the chart. It didn't exist until she got there. And Caitlin Clark is a generational player, as I think Angel Reese is as well. Again, I'd like to see it on the court as more of a rivalry than this off-the-court crap. And Angel Reese, it just rubs you the wrong way when you're putting down a guy called the GOAT in the NBA and calling attention to the fact that his rivalry...
It's petty.
It is. It's very bothersome to me. Because here's the deal. Jordan could have gone to 8 straight NBA finals. We all know that. And probably would have won. And Akeem Olajuwon would have lost both in Houston. But the whole thing is that to say that LeBron James isn't the GOAT or isn't in that conversation is absolutely absurd, considering he's still capable of putting 20-plus points on the board any night at 40 years old. Incredible basketball player. But again, the WNBA, I know in its own way, thanks these two women. I would like to see more of this rivalry on the court and get race out of it, please. It just hurts this country. As we run out of time, I just want to say again, the Indianapolis 500 today was supposed to be maybe the most historic Indy 500 of all time. Joseph Newgarden is going for his third consecutive Indianapolis 500 win. It's unprecedented, never happened before. However, he has been penalized, and Newgarden and Penske teammate Will Power will start in the back of the 33-car field due to penalties handed out to Team Penske for illegal part modification. But because of his exceptional qualifying time, still has the third-best odds to take home what would be a historic third-straight Indy 500 win. I don't think he does it. It's very hard to come from the back of the pack. And
I don't think anyone's ever done it.
No, they've never done it. And Roger Penske, you didn't need to cheat. This guy has the skills, the tool, and had the vehicle to do this, and you ruined it.
Can they bring back like an AI of Gomer Pyle singing Back Home Again in Indiana?
I would love to see
back
that for today, but it's on today. Always kind of love that. I mentioned earlier, Phillies, 9 straight wins, hottest team in baseball, and the Oakland A's, which will eventually be the Las Vegas A's, the coldest team in baseball, have now lost 11 straight games. And even though the Tigers 5-5 in the last 10, best record in the American League at 33-20. Aviators, best record in the Pacific Coast League, 32-17. Two more games on the road, and then they're back on Tuesday for a 6-game stint against the Oklahoma City Dodgers. Don't miss it. Get down there and check out the ballpark. Listen, we're out of time. Want to thank Chris Chapman, Spencer, back with us next week. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. We'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.